Hey guys, I'd like to take the time to thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for sponsoring the show and helping me keep the podcast free. Go check out their website, phoenixshootingbags.com. And if you want to purchase anything, just type in John Stallone, all one word, no space in between my name, in the shopping cart coupon area, and you will save 20% on your order. It's pretty sweet. They're awesome bags. If you like shooting and you like long range shooting, they are a must. They've really improved my accuracy and really helped me out with my clients guiding. It's made my life a lot easier helping guys get on deer, and it could do the same for you. So go and check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com, and let's roll into the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to do a little storytelling session, a little campfire session with Josh Corbin, the antler trader. And yeah, we're going to shoot the shit a little bit and maybe learn something. What's going on, man?
What's going on, brother? How you doing?
Just trying to get everything squared away. Hunting season already started for me. I just got back from California.
That's right. I watched that. Did you have fun?
I had a great time. Once again, somehow I managed to screw it up and not get a blacktail. But, yeah.
That's tough.
I mean, I shot a pig. This is the first year that I actually picked up a pig tag. I usually, when I go there, I'm so focused on trying to get a blacktail. I'm like, but literally the first night I saw like probably six different groups of pigs bug glass, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get one. I'm gonna get one if I have an opportunity to.
Yeah. Are you hunting one of those B zones?
It's an A zone. Yeah, it's A zone, California A zone. It's a very northern part of the A zone, basically, just before B zone.
So, right on.
Yeah, it's a fun hunt, man, but and really what else are you going to do in July? But because of the time of year, it makes it really difficult to hunt them. They're super everything's super super dry.
Uh-huh.
And the grass is really tall. It's just like, but there's still water everywhere, so you can't use water to your advantage. So it's not like you go sit water, right, or whatever. It's strictly a spot and stalk, or really most of the guys out there still hunt. They just kind of, you know, sneak along through the woods and, you know, use old logging roads and old ranch roads and whatnot, and just kind of, you know, happen upon them and shoot them. I did quite a bit of that this year. I did quite a bit of that 2 years ago. No. Last year, because place we were hunting last year, for the most part, was not glassable at all. Super thick. It was like a boreal forest, like, you know, just thick and tangled. But yeah, guys get it done all the time. It's not like it shouldn't be this hard, but for some reason, for me, I keep screwing it up. I've had opportunities at younger, lesser deer that I probably would have shot that first year that I went.
Yeah.
But then I started really getting into big bucks and started finding like really good deer. And I don't know, man.
It's addicting. It's hard. It gets when you start getting into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to just shoot a good deer.
Right.
When you know, or a smaller deer, or just filling the tag when. That's when you start hunting big bucks, that's where it's at. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. For me, it is, at least.
If it's a species that I've never killed, which I haven't killed a blacktail yet.
Right.
If it's a species that I haven't killed, I'm going to shoot whatever.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100%. There's a bunch of species that I've killed that I'm not going to be picking on.
Yeah.
But when it comes to stuff like mule deer.
Yeah.
Even elk, dude. I want to hunt the biggest ones. I mean,
right,
where I'm at, you know. And I'm perfectly content and okay with eating tags.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me one bit.
They see me. The tags end up eating me. But I was willing. I
Yeah,
used
no,
to keep a pile. I used to keep a pile of all the tags I didn't fill, like as a reminder. I don't know. It was like a motivational thing. And then I realized it was kind of working against me a little bit. So.
I have every tag I've ever bought since I was old enough to.
Oh,
Every
really?
license.
Oh, wow, man.
I save them all. I'm a pack rat, dude. It drives my wife crazy, but I'm one of them guys, dude. I save every. I got a box, a shoe box. It's a big wooden box, but it's like the size of a shoe box that is completely full of hunting tags and license from every animal, every species. There's duck stamps in there from Idaho. I mean,
That's
every
cool.
single one I've ever bought.
That's cool, man. I mean, that's kind of cool to look back at.
Yeah.
If you're doing it for that reason, when I was doing it, I think I was using it like as a negative reminder. Like,
Yeah,
it
like a
was putting, and I ended up
motivational.
putting pressure on myself. So,
Absolutely.
yeah, I've kind of gotten away with it. But now, like, I think this hunt, I've let it get into my own head, and I want it so bad that I keep screwing it up. Like,
Yeah.
because I've had such like, I mean, and I know I know I want it so bad, because like on this hunt, I took a couple of like, I'll call them Hail Marys. I mean, they're makeable shots for me. Like, I've made those shots before many
Right.
times, but it's not something that I would do on an animal,
Right.
normally. Not normally. It's not my thing. But I mean, I'm known for taking long shots, but those were longer, like 110 yards. I don't usually shoot that freaking far when it comes to killing animals. Yeah. So whatever. I noticed that I was getting a little desperate when I did it. I was like, man, you need to fucking chill out. You need to back out. You need to back up. And it was funny because then I was presented with that very same opportunity again, another long shot broadside. Actually, this time the deer didn't even know I was there. And I talked myself out of it. I was like, you know what? Let's not do it. Let's not do this. You don't need to,
Right. Were you filming this
lose
hunt?
it. I started off filming it. So I brought Zach Harold, and he runs a podcast called Archery Maniacs. I brought him with me because he's been getting into the whole filming thing and whatnot. So I brought him with me to film. And about 3 days into it, I'm like, listen, it's so dry, it's so nasty. Like, you can't do an over-the-shoulder thing. It doesn't work. It's just too loud.
Yeah.
So I had him filming me from afar, and I'm like, you know what? At this point, man, I'm gonna use you as a freaking guide. I'm gonna have you talk me in. I'm gonna when I
Yeah.
find deer, when I find deer, we're gonna I'm gonna give you my binos and stick a radio in your ear. That's what I end up doing for the last few days, and it helped out tremendously because that's when I had all my really really close encounters. But
Yeah. That's a big help when it comes to spot and stalk, man.
oh yeah, I know. Some people call it cheating, but I don't know. I
Why?
guess
Why is it cheating?
I know. I being here in Arizona, everybody does it. I grew up doing it
Well, the
here,
thing is, it's like, really, who wrote these rules? I mean, honestly, I hear so many of these things like cheating, and it's like, you are the dominant predator. You have the brain power that you have to figure out, how to get something done.
Right.
No other animal does that. Every other animal has a fight or flight. They're not going to figure out what stop and assess the situation and go, all right, hey, you go over here, you go over. You know what I mean? They're either going to fight or flight. Why is it cheating? If you can figure out a way to kill an animal, which is the point, I always
I'm with
wonder who
you.
wrote these
Yeah.
rules.
I'm with you. And honestly, having done it for so long, and usually the animals I'm doing it on are coos deer, mostly, more than anything. Like, it helps, but it's definitely not a silver bullet. It's definitely not the cure all.
No.
Because,
No.
sometimes I think it hurts you, especially depends on who you have behind the radio.
Right,
And
100%.
Zach had never done that before. We had some miscommunications the first couple of stalks there. But
It takes a couple times with somebody that you hunt with regularly to get
yeah,
it down. I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
it's hard. I mean, we do it guiding. We try to do it
Oh yeah.
guiding, and sometimes sometimes you
It's an
can't
art
tell
form.
how that mountain range is or how far away they really are from the animal, and it's tough
Reading
when
the
they don't know what you're
terrain,
talking about.
reading the wind, you know, reading the
Right.
terrain, reading the wind. Yeah, it takes a real, I mean, it's an art form. You got to be doing it for a long time to really kind
Yep.
of perfect it.
Absolutely.
So,
And new guys, it takes a little bit to understand what what
yeah.
you're used to, what you mean, vice versa.
Right.
So
Right.
I don't see it as cheating. I
I
personally,
know. I mean,
I
there's a
don't
lot
think
of states that
it's
don't
cheating.
allow it, which kind of sucks. I
Yeah,
know. So,
radio contact. Well, and
yeah.
if you want to enter it in Pope and Young, they fight radios and
I don't really
electronics.
give a shit about Pope and Young or not, to be honest with
I
you.
me and
But
you both.
I mean, that stuff doesn't matter to me. But I mean, there are several states that you're not allowed to use radios at all for hunting. And I know Colorado doesn't allow it, Montana and Wyoming for sure.
Right.
I don't know if Idaho does.
I don't know either.
I've gotten some mixed reviews on that from different people that say yes, some say no. I can't find it in the regs. Actually, where it talks about radio in the regs, it doesn't say anything about using it to take. It just says you can't. I forgot what the verbiage is, but it basically doesn't say, oh, you can't use it to hunt with.
Right.
But states that you can, I know Utah you can, Arizona you can, New Mexico you can, California you can, South Dakota you can if you're on private land but not on public. I don't know about North Dakota. I don't know about Washington or Oregon, but I want to say you can use them there. I believe I've talked.
Oregon, I'm thinking, for some reason, I was thinking you can in Oregon, but I could
Yeah.
be wrong.
I
Don't
don't know
know.
how that would help you in Oregon anyway, since you can only see 4 feet.
Yeah. On
But,
the east side,
oh,
up
that's true.
north.
The east side. Yeah, that's right. There is the desert there. I always forget about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Oregon actually in the beginning of September for Rosie's.
Dude, I want to go up there and do that so bad. I've got buddies that want me to go to California and do some of that blacktail stuff, but just
Yeah.
there's not enough time in the archery season for everything, not with guiding full time. So
Yeah.
I've
Well,
got
that's why I
six.
love the California thing, man. It's in July. What the hell are you doing in July? I mean, you're
Yeah.
shed hunting and maybe scouting for your clients, but
I'm straight scouting. I tried go
yeah.
shed hunting a week ago with Ben, and
Yeah.
just 2 days of misery and heat.
Freaking hot as hell, man. Can't imagine putting
Yeah.
that amount of kind of miles in that heat.
It was rough. It was super rough.
Yeah. You guys
So
got
we
a
pretty much
bunch
scout.
of. Go ahead. Sorry,
Oh,
what were
I
you
was
saying?
just saying, we pretty much just scout in July.
Yeah. You guys got a bunch of nice bucks picked out for clients and shit?
We got a few. It's going to be a pretty good year. I mean, it's not going to be, personally, from what I'm seeing, it's not going to be like years past, but it's still going to be a good year.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that
I mean,
mostly on the strip or you got
Well, it's strip, and then I personally, I've got tags here in southern Utah,
Oh, do
so.
you? Oh, nice. Nice. I'll be in Utah at the end of the month. I'll
What do
be
you
at
got?
the
What are you doing
I have
down there?
Manti Central.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, I got dedicated hunters, so
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm gonna try like hell to kill, because I think we've got a week, just a little over, almost just a little under a week before Arizona opens. So my plan is to try to get a deer killed before the opener of Arizona with my bow.
Oh, that'd be
And
cool.
then I head to Arizona to start guiding, and I'll be in Arizona 20 days straight guiding.
Oh, wow.
And then when I get back, I think I'll have maybe 4 or 5 days left of the archery hunt here. Maybe longer. I'll have to look, but it's like a
Got it.
week. I get a week if I haven't killed, and then after that, my focus goes to wife and kids tags, and then
Yeah.
more guiding.
So, What unit is that? Do you have the designated hunter? Is it that's not Ponsicott, is it?
For me?
Yeah.
No, Pine Valley.
Oh, Pine Valley. Okay.
Yeah, the Pine Valley unit.
Yeah.
Pretty much, I live right in the St. George sits right between Zion and Pine Valley.
Right,
My
right.
daughter's got a Pine Valley rifle tag, and my wife has a Zion rifle tag this
Nice. The Zion
year.
one's a
So,
pretty really good rifle tag, isn't it? Or
it's a
fairly good.
tough rifle tag. It's
Is it?
got killer gear, but there's so much private property.
Oh, yeah.
And last year, it was super dry, super warm, so it was a tough tag to have last year.
Does the rifle tag goes all the way into the rut? It goes all the way into November or no?
No,
No, okay.
and Utah just opened up two rifle tags this year. Everything will have two. There's two rifle tags in all the most of general seasons.
Okay.
So, like 3 days after muzzleloader starts, I think it's actually like the very first week of. I think it's October 3rd, the early rifle hunt opens and goes 9 days or 10 days, and then closes, and there's a couple day break, and then the late rifle hunt starts. But I think it's done by the 25th of October.
I only rifle hunted there once, and it was on a landowner. It was on a what is it called? What tag is that called?
A CWMU?
I think maybe that's what it was. And I actually got to hunt him during a rut, which was kind of
Oh, okay.
cool. Because even when we were hunting on private or in public, we were. You could hunt us. Oh wait, no, sorry. We were hunting on private. I don't remember. All I know is that a lot of the deer through that time of year. They kind of, even when you can see them on public, they're all skirting the private land. Like there's just a lot. I mean, all the deer come out of the woodwork over there, I guess. Just like anywhere else in the rut, I guess.
Yeah.
But
Zion's a little bit of a different unit than Pine Valley. It's got the big mountain. Everything comes off of Cedar Mountain, pushes down. But if there's so much private from in that middle to bot low country that,
yeah.
it can be a gamble. So we'll be doing the early. Hopefully we can find a resident buck kicking around because the rifle hunt should be early enough after the muzzleloader, that stuff's still kind of bachelored up. Usually the muzzleloader and or the rifle hunts when stuff starts scattering and getting pushed and holding up, and it's why I usually don't like that hunt because I can't hunt a specific buck.
Right.
It's you're I mean it's pointless to even scout.
It's been years since I've hunted a specific buck. They become specific bucks when I get there and I find one and I try to stay on one. That's a different story. But like, I don't really ever have the opportunity to scout. I was just having this conversation with Robbie Denning this morning, via text message. We were talking back and forth, and I was like, I don't ever really get to scout anymore for myself. Like it's, I live all my seasons are like a week at a time. Like, 'cause it's not like I got the opportunity to say, oh, hey, babe, I'm gonna leave right now and take 3 days so that when I leave in 2 weeks for a week, I can't, I just can't do that. It's not gonna happen
Right.
anymore. I
But
won't
see,
have a wife anymore.
you're pretty far away from stuff that you hunt then, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah, for the most part. So the only thing I ever really get to scout a little bit is I scout the metro zone, which is where I live in Scottsdale. Scottsdale Phoenix metro zone, like for deer in December and January. But and I have my spots that I know that deer kind of show up year after year. Like I hunted one buck over here for 4 years and I never could connect with them, and I end up taking my number two buck 2 years and 2 years in a row while hunting him, and so like that I get to do, unless I have like a client or I have like a really big, like when I had my sheep tag, I went down and did quite a bit of scouting for that. That's a life once in a lifetime tag. My
Yo,
wife
yeah,
was very
absolutely.
understanding about that, And then it's fun. The crazy thing is, I didn't end up shooting the sheep that I wanted, that I had planned on shooting. I didn't even like. I only hunted 3 days. I put like five times that in scouting, and I only hunted 3 days. I was kind of upset about that whole situation, but anyway, yeah, it is what it is. So yeah, my seasons are like 5 to 7 days at a time. I show up, I find deer, find elk, whatever, and then I, you know, if one happens to be one that I want to shoot, I make a play for it. If not, I don't.
Yeah,
Simple as that.
that's what I love about velvet and archery deer. It's like today, I can run up. Get up early, run up on the mountain and scout for a couple hours and then be back home, usually late morning, around noon at the latest. Or if I want to do an evening or even run out in spotlight for a night, everything's pretty close. But that's what I love about it, is I can find a buck. I mean, I've got a few bucks found right now, but I can find a buck and kind of keep an eye on him and continue to look for other bucks, something bigger, better, and just keep going the rounds, and
Well,
it doesn't always work because opening day comes around and
and everything changes. Yeah.
there's guys that are there that you didn't know were there. Other people have found it. I mean, it's still a struggle, but it makes it fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Hey guys, just a real quick break. Pardon the interruption. I want to talk to you about becoming a patron of the show. It's super easy. You just go to the interviews with the Hunting Masters on my Podbean account, and at the top right-hand corner, you'll see a green button that says "Become a Patron." Or if you're using the Podbean app, it's right there. Just click on the button, "Become a Patron," from any of the episodes. I really go out of my way not to bombard you with a bunch of ads and clutter up clutter up the episodes. I really like to keep it as educational and as valuable as possible. I'd like to add to that value by adding some bonus episodes that are going to be just for the patrons only. I'm going to release a few that are strictly for those of you who have contributed to the podcast. It really goes a long way, and I want to say it again that even a dollar a month, pledging a dollar a month, $12 a year may not seem like a whole lot, but it means the world to me. It helps me take care of the cost of producing this show, and I really appreciate it, and I'd appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening, and let's get back to this episode. So, I have you on to talk about some stories. If you got a story that like maybe you learned something about hunting or changed the way you hunt today, something that really stuck with you. If you could lead off with that'd be awesome.
Man, I honestly, every hunt has taught me something. Every hunt always teaches me. So I don't know. Probably the most memorable hunt would be my son's elk hunt, my son's last elk hunt when he harvested his second bull.
Oh, wow.
That was a lot of fun. That taught me a little bit more about elk than I ever knew. I mean, and I by no means know elk. I've killed my fair share and then some, but mostly cows and in Idaho. I haven't been a big bull, hunter. I've been straight mule deer pretty much most of my life. I love mule deer, but that hunt, that was a lot of fun. That hunt was, like I said, I've never messed with bugling before. I have always kind of had the opinion that bugling was overdone. I'm not very good at bugling, but I honestly also don't want to be good at bugling, if that makes sense. I personally think being a crappy bugler like I am helps me because I sound less intimidating. But I mean, that's just my personal
No,
thought.
I'm with you on that. You sound like a beatable bull. You seem like a young bull. I,
Something
oh
that's
yeah.
just not going to push the herd, but mostly maybe put up with, be put, you know, he'll put up with something closer.
Yep.
Just, I mean, I've been with guys that are really good at bugling, and you know, as far as being a caller, professional caller, they're great. And 9 times out of 10 with those guys, we're chasing elk. I mean, they're getting the responses, they're getting the noise, but they're always working away. And I guess, you know, personally for me, what worked for us at least, that, you know, and has continued to work for me, is sounding like a smaller, higher pitched bull. You'll get the responses and stuff just because elk are vocal, you know, they're always talking, but you don't get the push from them, in my experience.
No, I get it. I get it.
I mean, there'll probably be a whole bunch of elk guys writing in telling you, dude, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about, but I'm just talking from my, you know.
If there's one thing I've learned is, and I honestly, I just made a post about this the other day, is no matter what is out there's always something else out there to contradict it. It's like no matter what research you get, you'll have one guy to be like, you know, I do this and I've had 100% success rate with this and that. And then you get this guy who goes, I've had 106, you know, percent success rate doing the complete opposite. You know,
Well, you
I'm
know,
all about, listen, I want to know as much as I can know.
yeah.
I want to throw the kitchen sink at everything I do, you know.
Right.
Sometimes that hurts me because I don't pick one, you know, one specific road to go down, but a lot of times, you know, if you're good about recalling and like looking at a situation and going, oh, I've been faced with this before. This worked for me, this worked for me, this worked for me. Let's try this. I think this is going to be, this fits the situation the best, you know?
Right.
So.
I kind of got a little bit of a philosophy that, you know, animals in general are in a way like us. They kind of have their own personalities, and they kind of do what, you know, what they want to do, the way they want to do it. So to say that like a mule deer is always going to do this,
Yeah, it's.
or to learn something about a mule deer to do, you know, it's, I think every single deer is different. Personally, I mean, one's going to go up when one goes down, or you know, and one thing that I think has helped me is when I hunt a deer or I find a deer that I want to hunt, I try to pay as much attention to him as I can, and try to get an understanding as to what he feels comfortable doing. But if I do bump him, if I do, you know, something, and he does something specific, trying to pay attention to that. Because, dude, I have tried 100 times, you know, you learn something on a deer, and then you try to do it again on a completely different deer, and it just keeps backfiring and backfiring. And I think that deer's got his own way of doing things, just like we do. And so, I mean, there's been deer that I've been able to get super aggressive with because I feel like they're gonna do the same thing, and it's worked, and then turned around, and it's man, it never works on others. So, I mean, elk, I think no different, you know. I think I just try to find the elk. I try to find the elk that bugle and stick around to what, you know, they're gonna put up with from me. Not necessarily somebody else, you know, type deal. It's, you know what I mean? It's
Yep. No,
the
I
way I
get you.
try to look at it. And elk, they're so vocal that, I mean, I feel like once the sun comes up, another thing that's helped me is once the sun comes up, I pretty much start putting calling to an end with
Yeah.
elk. Just because that's kind of what they seem like they're used to all over our part of the country, you know, is everybody, that's when everybody's got their calls out and walking the hills and bugling and stuff. I like to do a lot of bugling and locating at night in the dark still, and then try to make a plan from there. You know, especially the early mornings, like an hour or two before the sun comes up, because usually that's when they're going to move out of the open areas and start working back up to the trees. But they're still bugling. I mean, How many years have you seen the rut go completely during the night and dead during the day?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So I do,
Especially
you know, that's,
with that full moon.
yeah, that's another thing that I try to utilize too. And in spotlighting, we spotlight a lot, you know, if we
Yeah.
follow the rules on it, but that's,
Yeah.
you know, that's where we've pretty much pushed these animals to where they're 100% nocturnal. So try to take, you know, every little thing I can during the night and take advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, how old is your son?
My son actually turns 17 here on the 6th of this month.
Okay, cool. And
So
that bull he shot when he was what, 15, you said?
he's killed two bulls. His first bull, he was 12 years old. It was his first year hunting, and he killed a great, I mean, stud bull for the areas, you know, pushing 360. And then again, when he was 14, he killed
Wow.
another bull, and he killed a 330 bull. Same country, over the counter units here in Utah.
Awesome.
OTC units here in Utah. The first one, man, it was hunting. It was 100% luck. I mean, we knew elk were in the area. There was a whole bunch of us, and we decided we were all going to kind of fan out and push this big patch of trees. And either we're going to push elk out, people are going to get shots, or somebody's going to get a shot. Kind of what we were hoping. And man, my kids, they were 12 years, 12 and 13 at the time. It was me, my daughter, my son, my wife, and we kind of went up the middle. And we got in there about halfway in the trees, and I started hearing cows talking and mewing. We had this little opening that we worked up into. We were on a finger, and we looked across, and we were in the middle of just thick cedar trees. And we look across the draw in this one little opening, and there's two bulls standing there on the skyline looking at us. And I just told him, I said, shoot one, you know, pretty much. It was complete chaos, obviously,
Right.
like it always is. You know, I got a 12-year-old trying to pull, you know, stand and freehand his rifle to shoot a bull that's probably 150, 200 yards away on the
Oh,
next
wow.
green.
That's a feat for a kid. That's
And
a feat for anybody.
he shot him a little low in the shoulder, wounded him pretty good. And we gave him some time, and then we started tracking him. And it was a long tracking job. And there was some people in the middle of it that weren't helping us out. They were pushing them and stuff. And you know, just before last light, we were able to recover the bull.
That's
So
awesome.
that was really awesome. And the best part about it was we were almost, by the time we got to about middle of these trees, we were probably, I don't know, good 3/4 to a mile from the truck at that point. And when it was all said and done, that bullet ended up doubling back and dying only like 200 yards from the truck.
Oh, that's always fun.
Yeah,
That's good.
we loaded him whole.
Dude, I got a knock on wood, except for my Utah bull. Every other bull I've ever shot has died fairly close to a road where I can get a truck there and not have a grueling pack out. I've been really lucky. Utah sucks. That was an 11-hour pack out, but
Dude, that's been every elk that I or a family member has killed in Idaho has been a grueling pack out. And it's always cows. You
Yeah.
know, four people, five people there just to pack out one elk. And then, you know, somebody else would dump one and away we go, packing out more. I've packed a lot of elk. I don't, that's a lot of why I got out of elk hunting.
I've heard other people say that actually, you know. It's funny. Yeah, I went strictly to mule deer after having to pack out too many elk.
You know, I am in my own opinion, and the way I look at it, I have a certain trophy in mind. Like I'm an antler hunter, dude. I love antler. Meat's a bonus for me. And so for me to continue to, you know, where I live and everything, you know, tags are hard. Good elk tags are hard to get down here. And good bulls are hard to turn up in a lot of the country I grew up in. a lot of that country I grew up in wasn't elk country, it was mule deer country, and elk over the years have moved in. So a lot of little bulls. So like I had no desire after, you know, all the cows that I've hauled and I've killed a couple small bulls, I just had no desire to shoot little stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work for just, you know, what in my opinion, a little antler. So mule deer were a lot more readily available and turning up good bucks and having tags in my pocket.
Right.
That's kind of what pushed me to mule deer a long time ago. And when I first started, dude, I dumped everything that had antlers. I did for probably 8 years, first year, 8 years of hunting. You know, I didn't care. There was no antler size to me, but eventually when you dump enough deer, it's like you start wanting more, you know, like a little bit more of a challenge. Because, I mean, the little deer are easier to hunt. That's why they die.
Yeah.
They stand around a little longer.
There's more of them. Yeah.
There's more of them. Yeah. So I wanted more that way. And I wanted to hunt bigger deer because bigger deer were harder to kill.
Right.
That's, you know, that's when I quit, you know, I caring about whether or not I filled my tag.
Yeah.
Because it used to be that was the thing. You know, I went 8 years straight filling my tag in Idaho deer. And I was like, hell yeah, that's awesome. That's the goal.
Right. Yeah.
But then it was like, is it really?
Yeah.
You know, what
it's funny. Did you ever, I'm sure if you took hunter safety, you'll remember, because I remember them talking about it in hunter safety class. The five stages of a hunter.
Yeah.
Starts with limiting out is the number one. Like number one stage, just you want to fill the tag. And then it goes to, I don't remember what the second one is. But then the third one is method, like you're more concerned about how you kill it, like it's with a bow or with a, you know, bot install or whatever. And then it goes to trophy, and then from trophy you become a sportsman. And sportsman is just like you're happy to be out there, and everything about the hunt is what you enjoy. It doesn't, the end result doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I've slid back and forth on that scale. I don't know how many times I've been all over it. You know, there wasn't a progression for me. Matter of fact, I think I started out, well, maybe not really, because as a kid, it really all I wanted to do was freaking pull the trigger. But you know, after I had shot a few, I think I jumped the next step and went straight to method, and then I was stuck there for a long time, and then I went to try. I don't know. I've been all over the fucking map.
And see, I've never been hung up on method. I love my bow. I love archery hunting. Mm-hmm. If I could pick, I would rather archery hunt over anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not in any way opposed to using a rifle. Whatever it's going to take to get the job done, and whatever's open. I just want to hunt.
Right.
I don't think there's any rhyme or reason not to use whatever, you know, a rifle or versus a bow versus a muzzleloader. I personally love my bow and would rather hunt with my bow, but dude, I mean, if there's a 180 plus inch buck out there and there's a rifle and it's legal rifle season, dude, we're hammering down.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna be like, where's my bow? It doesn't make sense to me. I want to, if I can kill it easier with something else, let's do it.
I hear you. I it was crazy because, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years, up until about 4 or 5 years ago, I used to like thumb my nose up at rifle hunting. You know, like I was just like, nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it. Except for coos deer. I don't know. That was my only exception. Like, just because I felt like they were such a formidable opponent, no matter what you were using, that it was okay. But yeah, like, I don't know. I found a different way of hunting with the rifle. Like, for me, it used to be like, I saw something. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I could shoot it from right here. I'm just going to lay down and shoot it. And I started stalking in and trying to get closer and making closer shots like I would if I had a bow. And that changed it for me. Even though I got a rifle I could shoot 1,500 yards with, which that too is cool for me. Like shooting something from really long distance as opposed to that Like, I feel if it's like 500 yards, it's not fair. It's like, it's close enough that it's too easy of a shot. It's too easy of a shot, and it's far enough away that they have no freaking idea you're there, you know?
And see, that's what's crazy is you hear so much of this, like, it's unethical to shoot, you know, a deer at 100 yards with a bow, or an animal at 1,000 or 1,200 or 1,500 with a rifle. You always hear that because it's like, oh, it's too easy. You're taking the hunt out of it and all this. But really, dude, I see a lot of guys every single year that can't get it done at 200 yards.
Oh, all the time.
So, I mean, you look at the guys that are getting it done at 1,000 yards,
yep,
or 100 yards with a bow, and you put them into the general, you know, the general hunting community, and what is it, 1%?
Yeah.
Maybe 1%. You know, 99% of everybody else is still shooting deer with you know, 40 yards or less, or 30 yards or less with their bow, or they're still taking that 100 to 200 yard max rifle shot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 1%. So it's like, how is it? I mean, people act like all these deer are just dying everywhere else because we're taking these easy, you know, we're letting technology rule. But really, it's only like 1%. It's not the vast majority.
I have a hard time with that whole debate, especially. So my bow that I'm shooting today is leaps and leaps and bounds above what I started with in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, shooting a 40-yard, 50-yard shot was like, my God, that was unheard of, you know?
Yeah.
Then. But I feel like even with this awesome bow, if you give it to somebody that doesn't have – isn't as well practiced as I am, or doesn't have the experience, they're still going to be limited to that. But what it does is, for the guys that are willing to put the extra time in, put the extra work in, so to speak, to become proficient at, let's say, 100 yards, now it gives them that opportunity. I don't think it should be a discussion of ethics.
I think
where the ethics are involved is if you never practice at those ranges, if you're not listen, if you're going to shoot at 100 yards, I feel like you should be able to hit at 140 yards, 150 yards
right
with your bow. That's my rule of thumb, you know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I mean, you look at guys like John Dudley.
Yeah.
You know, Olympic shooter, that guy shoots – are you going to tell him that he can't shoot a deer at 100 yards?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that guy shoots all the time.
Yeah, but exactly.
I hate when ethics are brought up in general, because I feel like that's like the last case, the last, you know, ditch it at trying to win an argument.
Yeah.
Personally, especially in the hunting community.
Yeah.
Because really, ethics are different from state to state, family, culture, to religion. I mean, ethics... It's such a broad, I mean, it's like, all right, I'm losing, I'm throwing ethics in there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I get it all the time. I feel like, man, I feel like it's a personal choice.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a thin line. There's a, like, I'm not saying everybody should be out there willy-nilly freaking flinging arrows at, you know, 100 yards or whatever.
No.
But I feel like it's a personal choice. If you are honest with yourself and know your limits, I don't see why you shouldn't be able to take your hunting to your limit.
Right.
Don't push it past your limits, but take it to your limit. If you know that you're freaking dead nuts at 1,000 yards with your rifle, and you've made that shot 100 times, you can do it. I'm fine with it.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Just because your gun can shoot 1,000 yards, and you've only shot at the 500,
right,
that's a different discussion. That's absolutely where I think the ethics, like, that's where it comes into play. I think it's a personal choice. Like, for me, my personal choice is, I know my bow with if I put a slider on it,
Yeah.
I could get about 140 out of it with, you know, before it touches the arrow.
Yeah.
But I limit myself most of the time. Most of the time, I limit myself to 80-yard shots when I'm hunting. But I practice. I practice beyond that, so that I know that when I'm faced with that, I can make that shot. Now,
well,
every once in a while,
easier.
I push it. Every once in a while, I push it because I sometimes get a complex that John Stallone is the greatest archer in the whole world, and I know I'm not. But in the heat of the moment, I get desperate and I do stupid shit like I did in this blacktail hunt. But, you know, I mean, I think everybody's in control of their own actions, and they should really just be honest with themselves. That's what it is. It's really just a honest conversation with yourself. What am I capable of doing? What do I know where my limits are? And then just back it down a scotch from that. And that's your effective range. That's your, you know, that's my philosophy on it. That's how it's been my whole life. But
now when you're out shooting like that, are you shooting broadheads out to 80?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
See, so, that's one thing I see, you know, a lot of guys don't do. We get guys in camp all the time that's, you know, are opening the pack, the hard plastic pack of their broadheads,
right,
screwing them on their arrows the night before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the damn time. So when I shot fixed blade broadheads, I never even shot field points. Never, ever, ever. Unless it was, you know, I went to a place that was required that I had to shoot. I couldn't shoot. Wasn't allowed to shoot. But I almost never went to the range. I always, once my bow was sighted in, I never shot it at paper again. I always shot it at a 3D style target, and I always used broadheads. Like, that was for years and years and years. Sometime, I don't remember, I always get confused, but I believe it was when Matthew sent me the Z7. I switched to a Rage broadhead because for whatever reason, and I was shooting Whisker Biscuit before that, I could not get the broadhead that I was shooting, the fixed blade that I was shooting, I couldn't get it to tune right. I couldn't, for me, it wasn't right. I was a perfectionist.
Right.
So I looked at Rage, and those shot great, but I had a lot of issues with them. You know, they shot like the field point shot, and that's what they advertise, and it does that. And, you know, I think I killed one deer with Rage, but I had a lot of issues with them. I think they're a great broadhead for tree stand hunter.
Yeah.
But not for spot stalk. They would open up, they rattle, just stuff like that. And then I learned other things about them over the years. Matter of fact, this last hunt, my buddy had a couple, my buddy Charles had a couple of incidents with a Rage failing on him, which, whatever. Anyway, this is not a conversation about bashing Rage. I started with the Rage, and then I tried Schwacker. Actually, I tried something else first. I think it might have been a Grim Reaper. Didn't like those at all right from the get-go. Didn't like the way they opened. I shot a Javelina with it, and just wasn't impressed. So then I tried the Schwacker, and I found the Schwacker had the best of all worlds for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very easy to tune. I could shoot field points, and then my broadheads would fall exactly where the field points were, like literally. I mean, I kept shooting, like I would shoot one field point and two broadheads, and like the group would all be together and out to great distances. So to answer your question, now I'll sight my bows in with a field point, and I will verify with an actual broadhead, not the practice broadhead, but I'll verify with the actual broadhead, like at three different ranges. And if my closest, my middle, and my furthest range. So on my bow, it's It's 20, 50, and 80. Okay? Those are the top pin, middle pin, and bottom, very bottom pin. And if everything's hitting the way I do, then I'll switch to those practice broadheads, or I'll just intermit between that and field points. But, you know, once you've verified that they fly the same or you get the same, and the reason why I don't keep shooting them is because you got to keep putting bands on them, and they destroy the shit out of targets. So, but
yeah, I know it's one of the things I fight it all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I just want to, some days I just want to go out. So I've got a, you know, so X amount of arrows with broadheads on them, and then I got X amount of arrows with field points, and it kind of depends on the day for me.
Yep.
You know, I don't ever try or force myself to shoot any certain amount of arrows. I mean, I shoot every morning, but actually July, I shoot less in the morning, depending on if I'm scouting or not, than I do the rest of the year. But I just pretty much every morning I go out, and it might be 5 arrows. It might be 20 arrows, you know, whatever. I'll shoot either or broadhead or field point. So I try to have it to where my field points are hitting a little high, but my broadheads are hitting right on.
Right.
So as far as the way my, you know, I've got mine set up, and it's usually just a, you know, depending on the distance, it's a minute change.
Right. And see, and you, what you're talking about is knowing your equipment, learning your equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really, honestly, I got away from, having change. Like I said, I used to only shoot broadheads because I used to have that little difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's just little tricks to kind of get those to get closer together. But I stopped doing that only because when a hunting situation is concerned, I stop thinking completely. Dude, I go in freaking autopilot. Yeah. I stop looking at ant. This is why it might be one of the reasons why I've had the success that I've had, but it's probably hurt me a couple times too.
Yeah.
I zone everything else out. I don't see nothing but the kill zone, and my body just goes to draw back, shoot, acquire target, shoot. You know, it's like draw back, acquire target, shoot. And a lot of that has to do with the practicing that I've done and the training that I've done.
Right.
Shooting coyotes was my biggest, like, it's a drive-by shooting, man. They come flying in. They stop for 3 seconds. Not even. You got that much time to get drawn back and acquire the target. Shoot it. Done.
See, and being like that, do you ever have a hard time remembering how it went down when you're, you know, trying to replay it back?
Yeah.
You know, did I hit him high? Did I hit him low?
I do. And that's what I'm saying. That's one of the drawbacks. One of the drawbacks that I had. So this, the pig that I lost in California, that you don't know about yet, but I lost the hog that I shot there. It was a pretty big boar. The first shot was a pass through, but I hit him far back. And pigs are kind of tricky. Like what you think would be a lung shot, a lot of times is guts. Like it's they're so far forward, everything's so far forward. And my buddy had just bounced a broadhead off a hog shield the night before. So I was trying to keep it away from the shield, you know. So it's just like that whole thing when you shoot an elk. Oh, I don't want to shoot the shoulder. Oh, of course, an elk's kill zone's, you know, freaking tremendous. But, you know, you kind of overthink it. So I kind of pulled it a little off. And anyway, so it started running uphill, and I said, I'm shot in the guts. I'm going to start. And then it turned right back and started running downhill towards me. And as it's running back, I just loaded another arrow, drew back, and, you know, I guessed at 45 yards. It took like a half second pause. I smacked it at 45 yards. And in my mind's eye, I remember it being slightly quartering away, and I tucked it up underneath the ribs. That's what in my mind's eye was. But the crime scene didn't say that to me, because I couldn't find blood for shit. The arrow, I know it was definitely a pass through. It was running on a hillside, and I know the arrow went through, but it hit the dirt on the other side, so it didn't go all the way through. It was probably she had or he had, I don't know, maybe 6 inches, 6, 7 inches sticking out the right side. So the rest was, I mean, it's a hog. It's not, it's a 29-inch arrow. So it basically ran away skewered. It was a hog kebab. And so I know I had an exit hole and I know I had an entry hole. The grass is like knee high. I found blood, but I tracked it probably for, I don't know, a little over 100 yards, 150 yards before I completely lost. I mean, I was finding like literally specks. So going back to what you said, in my in being like at that tunnel vision, kill zone, whatever, yeah, sometimes you lose information. You do. Because I obviously didn't shoot. If I was quartering away and I tucked it up the way I thought I did, that pig shouldn't have went 50 yards, especially with a second arrow. You know what I'm saying? It must have been another gut shot. Because it couldn't have been liver, because if it was liver, there'd still be a shit ton of blood, and there wasn't. And who knows, maybe I didn't range it. I just drew back and did my what I do with coyotes, man, and just if it's under 60 yards, I'm usually very accurate, but I could have been 5 yards off, and it's a pig, I could have hit him up high. It was no man's land. I don't know. I don't know now. Normally, I would go back and check the video, but I forgot to put a freaking card in my damn GoPro that night. That was another freaking rookie mistake.
And so that's what I was gonna say. How many times have you thought you knew how it went down, and then you watch the video, and it's like, oh, wow.
Most times, it's not. I would say less than 5% of the times that happens, because I usually don't make a bad shot. Now, I just jinx myself. I know I'm gonna freaking wound like the next six animals, but for saying that, but I usually don't make a bad shot, and I essentially made two bad shots in a row, and I don't know why. So
See, I've never hunted pigs, so I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I've heard they're addicting. Once
Oh
you
yeah.
start, you just want to keep going.
Oh yeah, crazy. I'll tell you know what's really fun is javelina with the longbow.
Really?
Oh my God, man. If you've ever snuck into 5 yards on anything,
Yeah, oh
it's
yeah.
just have you?
Oh
Have you
yeah.
got that close?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Shit. See, I'm not that sneaky because I can't. I've never. I don't think I've ever shot other than out of a tree stand. I don't think I've ever shot a deer under 50.
Oh really?
Yeah, most of the deer I've ever.
See, and
Oh,
that's what I've never
four.
gotten
Yeah,
into.
45, 40. Yeah, but.
I've never got into javelina hunting because I've never seen this the like
Sport
there's no
it.
challenge. Dude, I've had those things within a couple feet of me,
Yeah.
and shed hunting. But I mean,
Right.
it's like I can walk right up on them and then start making
See,
noises, and
that's
they come
weird.
running
It
back.
depends where you're hunting. It depends where you're hunting. I know places that are like that too, where like, I mean, you could go up and slap them in the face. But
You start kissing at them and screaming
yeah.
at them, and they're coming back, and like, what the hell? I mean, I've had
But then there's
a
other
couple
places
times
where,
I'm climbing a tree,
yeah.
Where's the
Now,
closest tree?
there's other when you hunt them in other areas, and it must just be their hunting pressure or whatever, they get conditioned to it. Like, there's no tolerance. They're gone.
Then I haven't messed with them. Most of the time, it's in the pines and
Yeah.
stuff.
See, that's where I've noticed that they seem to be like very tolerant of human beings.
I haven't messed with them down
Or
south
in
of the
town, sometimes
Smokestack.
in town too, they're real tolerant, like, because they're used to human interaction. But like, you go down south by the border, I mean, not that you can't get close, because they got shitty eyesight. And if there's a big group of them, they're making a lot of noise themselves, so your noise is kind of masked. But their noses are damn good. They catch wind of you, they're gone. But you got the wind right, you got a really good chance. But yeah, see, stocking up on them and to like 5, 6 yards and shoot them with a longbow. It's like, it felt like the first time I did it, it felt like it was the first time I ever went hunting. So it was pretty nuts. So yeah, anyway, like the first time I ever, well, I've only done it twice now, but I really felt, it literally felt like my first time hunting. Like it was really just like really nice, invigorating.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain. So.
That's bow. I mean, that's what I love about bow,
Yeah.
archery, or in anything. It's like it's that get close challenge. It's that
Yeah.
this might not happen. I mean, like I said, I've most of everything I've killed growing up was all rifle. I mean, growing up in Idaho, I used to always say I'm never gonna bow hunt
Yeah.
because rifle tags were so readily available, and I always had this philosophy. I was gonna or thinking I always thought that I was going to be in the hills and see the biggest deer I've ever seen or the biggest elk, and I'm gonna have this, back then, these old crappy compounds, like you said, 40 yards, I'm gonna have to try to kill it with that thing,
Yeah.
and so it's like, forget that, I'm a rifle hunter for life, I want to kill them.
Yeah.
And then eventually, after killing enough of them with the rifle, you're right, it's like, man, I want that first time feeling again.
Yeah.
And that's archery still, thank God, archery still gives me that
Right. Yeah.
excitement. And it doesn't really matter what I'm hunting. I mean, it's just getting in, sneaking in with your bow,
Yeah.
killing it.
Absolutely. No, it's fun, man. What else? I don't know. I feel like I rambled on a bunch. I didn't even let you
No,
talk.
we're I've been asking all the questions. Always like I said, dude, that's like there's never been a hunt on I haven't tried to learn something new, and anytime I get a chance to talk to anybody, I usually kind of dominate with all the questions. I just want to know. I personally feel like I don't know anything
Yeah.
because there's every year something new.
Oh, seriously.
So it's
I
like
know,
I'm
it's crazy with as much time as you spend in the field and, I was having this conversation with my buddy Charles the other day. People be like, "Oh, I've been hunting for 20 years." But that guy's been hunting for 20 years. He gets 1 week off, 2 weeks off, let's say 14 days, 15 days a year. What is that? I mean, 15 times 20 is, what is that? That's 60, that's 600. My God, my brain. I'm gonna have to use my calculator because I'm an idiot. 15 times 20, 300.
Don't ask
That's
me.
300. Almost said 600. That's 300 days. How many days a year do you spend in the field?
Honestly,
Yeah.
I mean, just days. I don't always stay the night, but I am in the I about 250 to 275
Right.
days a year.
So basically, in 2 years of day in the life of Josh, you've equated the same hunting experience as somebody
Yeah.
who's been hunting for 20 years,
Yeah.
And so we were just having this conversation, like. And it also works conversely too. Like I, or not really conversely, but the other side of the coin is this. Like I was getting down on myself, and this is how the conversation came up. I'm like, man, I can't believe it's 5 freaking years that I've been trying to kill a blacktail, and I still haven't killed a blacktail. And then I went back, and I'm like, I only hunted 28 days in
Yeah.
5 years.
It's crazy to look at it that way.
28 days. So, I mean, really, it's not like I've put time into it, but it's not like I put time into it,
Yeah.
And yeah, so I always I'm starting to, not always, but I've started to look at things and stop beating myself up over stuff like that, It's just, you got to take everything into perspective.
Yeah. Dude, I feel like, and see, I feel like the more, it depends on the area, but the more time that goes by, And the more time that sometimes I spend on, let's say, a certain part of the country or certain area, it's like I go over this hill. Like I start off, all right, I'm learning it, I'm figuring it out, I'm getting kind of confident, maybe a little cocky about it. And then there's this turning point where it's like what the hell? You know, like I feel like I don't know shit. I can't figure anything out. Like everything I thought I knew is not there, not working. And it's like that's where the frustration sets in. And then it's weird how that, and that's why I've sat back and it's like, you know, no matter how much time I spend, I feel like the only thing that I ever learn is where I'm going. You know what I mean? It's like I know where I'm going. I know where that route goes. I know where that trail goes. I know what's on the other side of that hill. But other than that, that's all I know.
No, I get it, man. It's easy to get frustrated. So, I mean, it's just because it was the most recent thing, but again, on the blacktail hunt, the very, was it the next night or 2 nights later? 2 nights later, I end up shooting the pig, a big sow that I end up harvesting. I shot her. I snuck into 15 yards. I shot her. And I went over there to find my arrow. Couldn't find it. Didn't find any blood. Searching around. Dude, it took me like 45 minutes to find first blood. And I was kicking and screaming like a little girl. I mean, not really screaming, but I was talking to Zach on the radio and Charles on the radio. I'm like, I'm gonna quit freaking bow hunting. This shit's ridiculous. I shouldn't be shooting at anything. All I'm doing is flinging arrows out here. I thought I freaking wounded another damn animal. I was like, and then it like, Charles was like, calm down. Something about those pigs, they don't start bleeding right away. He's like, try to remember which way it went. And I played it back in my head. I'm like, okay, I remember it running up this way. And I started it going that way that it ran. And then it was just like a dump truck of blood. It was just like buckets of blood, you know? But that first like 40, 50 yards, I didn't see a damn drop. Not a damn drop of blood. And I'm like, this just doesn't happen. This is just ridiculous. I know I hit that thing good, you know? It's 15 yards. I could have freaking threw my bow at it and killed it, you know? But anyway, so yeah. And so it was from the second I found the blood to where I found her was only like 30 yards. But it was crazy. It was like I was so frustrated, you know,
Yeah,
like.
dude, I know. My first ever archery buck that I killed, me and my buddy, my best friend, he was helping me on it, and we glassed this buck up a long ways out. And the way the country worked, the mountain range, the hills kind of made like a big horseshoe. And behind us was where we had parked and hiked up to the top. And then we were kind of looking across it from like tip to tip and then everything inside of it. And we glassed this buck up clear on the other side of this basin. And we just, you know, we watched him bed. He went behind this big, huge rock like wall. There's like this razorback ridge that come out, and he bedded right on the shady side right behind it. And it's like, hell yeah, we can get right up above that buck and shoot him in his bed. And so we took off, we get all the way up there, and my buddy Landon, he crawls up on the rock before me, and I hand him my bow, and I crawl up on this thing, and we're kind of sitting there, you know, crouched down. We're on our feet, but we're kind of sitting on the back of our heels. And he peeks over with the range finder and sees the buck bedded right below us, and he ranges him, and he's like 10 yards. And I'm like, oh, hell yeah. So I knock an arrow, and I pull back, and I'm getting ready to stand up, and we look out, and something, we think it was his shadow, spooked the buck, and he ran out from his bed and stopped broadside. And I'm already a full draw, and Landon ranges him. He's like 40 yards, and I put it on him, and everything, dude. We relived it the whole nine. It looks so perfect. Like right where you want. I mean, if there was a red dot on a foam target, hit here, I 12 ring is how it looked. And the buck went running down the hill, tipped over ass over end a couple times, hit the ground, and we're like, oh, dead deer, dude. We're guaranteed. We still sat there, gave him like 35 minutes, and just started following him from the point, you know, where I hit him, went over, picked my arrow up, and we started following him. And this was, I think I shot him at like 9 o'clock in the morning. We ended up on our hands and knees halfway across this basin trying to find blood. And he got into a bunch of other deer tracks and cow tracks and all this. And it's like, we don't know which way he went now. He had two other little bucks running with him. And we were literally on our hands and knees. And it was like 3 o'clock. We were in the middle of the day, first of all, you know, first part of August. And it's like, all right, we're going to mark this spot. Let's go back to camp. We'll refresh in the water. We're going to have something to eat. Think about it. We'll come back. We'll go right back on it. So, you know, 2 hours later, we come up on that same part where the hill we'd hiked up and started glassing, and but we were down at like maybe 75 yards. And we decided we're going to sit up and we're going to glass and see if we can glass any bedded deer, you know, one of these bucks that is with him or something, kind of get an idea. And 15 minutes into it, it's like, oh, hell, let's just take off. So we start taking off down the hill to go down in this basin, and I jump a buck. And it was one of the little bucks that was with him, and he runs right down the draw and turns and heads into the thick oak brush. And so I start walking down the draw, and I hit fresh blood. And I'm like, I whistle the land and, hey, get over here. So he comes over, and we find the fresh blood. And so it's like, all right, let's start tracking him. So we start tracking him. We're tracking him the wrong way for like an hour. And we get to a spot where he had bedded down, and there was just this big, like, dried up, you know, pancake of blood and like debris and stuff. But that's when we realized we're going the wrong way. So we turn around and we just haul ass back over to the draw, and we're sitting there, and it's like, all right, I'll go first. He's going to follow me and keep his eyes peeled, and I'm just going to follow track and blood. We follow it all the way down to the bottom, and it takes a hard right. And so we start following it to the right, and across the blood and tracks cross this little draw. And we get to the other side of the draw, and we've kind of, it's really sandy in the bottom of this, and we've lost blood and track. We don't know. And so it's like, all right, I'm going to take this track left, you go right. And so Landon, so I probably get probably 50 yards from Landon, and all of a sudden I hear him screaming at the top of his lungs, you know, get over here, get your. And I get over to him, and he pretty much stepped on this buck. Like, it jumped up in front of him, and he's like, he's hurting, dude. He went that way. Like, he could hardly get up and run from me. You know, get ready, get your arrow knocked. So I literally went like 30 yards from him, and I jumped this buck, like jumping pheasants. And he comes flying up out of the brush, and he's running straight away from me. And I pulled back at like 2 feet on him, and he's running, he's trying to run straight away from me, and his ass is staying in the air, but his front end keeps hitting the ground, and all I've got is an ass shot. I mean, I'm looking, he's straight away, and Lance goes, shoot him, shoot him. I'm like, all I have is an ass shot, and he's like, shoot him anyway. And I put one literally right into his ass, and it come out his neck. And this deer hits the ground, and we get over, and he's still trying to get up, and the ground, dude, this is my first ever archery buck. And
oh my
he's
God.
Sitting there, and we're literally standing above him, and he's trying to get up. And I pull back, I throw another arrow in, and I was going to just try to grab and cut his throat, but he was thrashing so much that I didn't dare try to get in there. So I pull back another arrow. I'm standing right above him. I'm going to put one right in him. And right as I release, he kicks, and I stick an arrow through his back leg. Like below the knee. So now I've got an arrow just stuck in his leg. He's still
just
trying to
impale you with it.
So I throw another arrow in, and I hit him, and he takes his last breath, and he's dead. And it was just like, we could not for the life of us think how that deer went as far as he did,
lived
for
his
as
lungs.
Long as he did,
yeah.
Hitting him where I hit him. But the way we didn't realize it, and it didn't look like it out beyond. But we were actually up above him quite a bit. So my shot was placement was perfect, but it come out in the bottom of his brisket. Like right between his front legs. There was that much angle.
Wow.
And it just clipped some stuff, dude, that deer laid down and hit the dirt enough that he was able to plug it up. And I mean, we had a hell of a time finding blood, but we ended up taking pictures with the sunset. I mean, it was from 9 o'clock in the morning to almost 9:30 at night before we recovered that deer.
Unreal.
It was wild. I mean, it's, you just never know, dude. You never know what they're going to do, how far they're going to go. You know, the will to live.
Oh, yeah. Nuts.
Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on, catching up with me. It's been a while.
Yeah, dude. I appreciate it very much. I love your podcast, dude.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Definitely not getting rich at doing it, so it's nice to get paid in appreciation.
Yeah, yeah, dude, this definitely isn't the industry to make, you know, get rich, but I don't care.
Nah, yeah, wouldn't have it any other way, man.
Absolutely.
Oh, cool. Well, good luck to you this season, and where can our listeners find out more about you and follow along with you, your adventures?
Antler Trader on Instagram and Antler Trader on YouTube and Facebook. Just all Antler Trader.
Cool.
So we need to get out this year too. If you, I don't know what you got going in January, but I'll be down on OTC stuff. You got a day or two? Go chase.
Oh yeah, man. I'll be tearing it up in January because that's the only time I really set aside for myself. I have two clients coming in, but they're going to be haunting with my guides. I'll probably spend a day or two with them here and there.
Yeah, but I think I got some clients first of January as well. But
yeah,
got, you know, long season right there.
Yeah, so. No, January's usually Johnny time.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go chase some beer.
Yeah, sounds good to me, man.
All right, brother.
All right, take it easy.
Take care.
Bye. Hey, guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.